Welcome to For Love and Music with Tara Joseph, as she explores the ever-changing music industry with today's top creatives, artists, and executives. Enjoy these fun and informative conversations with a little bit of love thrown in along the way.
Welcome to For Love and Music with me, Tara Joseph.
Now, I just love having super talented guests onto the show. And today's is a real, real gift. So welcome to the show, artist, producer, and composer, Jackson Greenberg. Jackson, hi, how are you?
I'm doing okay. Thanks for having me.
Pleasure. So I like to ask everyone at the beginning of the podcast, where are you right now?
I'm in LA, yeah, in Glassell Park in my studio.
Okay. Well, people can't see you, but I can. And it looks like you've got a great setup behind you.
Yeah, there's some instruments that are out on loan to a couple friends of mine right now. But it's a great room. Happy to be here.
Excellent. So obviously we find ourselves in a sort of unusual and quite challenging time where we've been on sort of isolation for weeks and weeks. And obviously that's started to lift a little bit right now. But as a composer, obviously you're generally in sort of isolation anyway, but how has forced isolation changed any of what you do, or hasn't it? Would love to know.
Yeah, it hasn't changed too much. I mean, I share my studio space with a really good friend of mine, another composer and musician who I've known since college. And we've kind of created our own little pod of being able to interact with each other every day. And I would say most musicians I record with like recording for me in their home studios. So, you know, other than kind of going home from the studio and not being able to go out and decompress at a bar or at a restaurant or something, it stayed pretty similar in that regard. Definitely less directors coming to the studio to sit in on sessions, which has presented its own type of challenges just in terms of the way that they're hearing the music. But other than that, it's been pretty similar.
So have you found that your workload is pretty much as it would normally be?
Yeah, I think I was scheduled. I had a bunch of projects scheduled up until kind of the end of July, and then things start to get a little wonky. But I've been very fortunate that my work has continued, and I think the stress of anything is kind of projecting out into the future of my schedule. But I'm trying to not think about that time period too much and just be grateful that I'm still working now.
Well, when I introduced you, I introduced you as an artist, producer, and a composer. Which of those three would you say is your sort of your biggest love?
Oh, that's a great question. I think somewhere between artist and composer. I mean, producing other artists, I thought when I first moved to LA was going to be a bigger part of my career. And the way that it's worked out is I produce some people, but generally they're friends of mine who I enjoy being in the studio with. But I would say artists and composer, and it's, I think probably composer at the end of the day. Like even when I'm writing music for myself, I try and find inspiration from some sort of visual. And I think working on a really good film, trying to put music to film I probably enjoy that more than just making music for myself.
And are you a multi-instrumentalist?
Yeah, I am. I play piano and drums, and I sing, and mallet percussion was a kind of passion and specialty of mine for a long time. So I try and play as much as I can on my own scores. And there's a lot of instruments I love to write for and use that I don't play. And for those, it's great to collaborate with local musicians who a lot of them have become good friends.
Awesome. Well, looking at your really amazing bio, I've obviously learned a lot about you. But starting at the beginning, you went to Princeton, and then you went to the USC Thornton School of Music. So it doesn't really get much bigger and better than that, does it? I mean, that must have been an experience in itself.
Yeah, I mean, they're both so different too, and just in the way and then that they teach music. So that was really interesting. I think growing up in Philadelphia, the idea of becoming a film composer was very confusing, I guess. And so right from the beginning at Princeton, I was like, I need to go to a film scoring graduate school if this is what I want to do, and was kind of headed in that direction, as opposed to, I think, some friends that grow up in LA and are no family, friends who are composers. Like, you eventually you learn that there's so many different paths into the profession. But yeah, it was interesting because the schools were so different in terms of their approach to composition.
So taking what you learned from both schools, and for the listeners out there who may want to get into composing, producing, etc., how do you go about the process? How, when you're presented with a project, do you see some of the footage first? Are you given the script? How does it work? And then obviously we'll talk about some of the great scores that you've actually created.
Yeah, I think it changes at every point in your career. You know, I read about Hans Zimmer and how he starts working with Chris Nolan right off the script. But for the most part, I was really fortunate to attend a Howard Shore masterclass when I was, I think, 19. And he said that he watches a movie without any music, and then he kind of goes away for up to a week and tries to write music that's kind of captures the emotions or the feelings that he felt during the process. So that's always my first step, is I watch the movie or watch a few scenes or a rough cut. And generally I request that I do so without any music, without any temp music. And then I go into my studio and write away from the picture, just so the entirety of my attention and my emotional attention is focused, or at least in the beginning of the process, on the music. So I'm not distracted by trying to see, oh, does this piece of music work with this scene? And I try and just remove all limitations on the process and really just allow myself to be as creative and free as possible. Because I think the further along you get into the film, the more limitations are put on you by deadlines, by the opinions of the director. And so the beginning for me is really like my time for myself to just have fun and be free and try and capture something musically that will sustain itself throughout the rest of the process.
Are you usually put on like a time deadline? Do you have to deliver to a certain date, or do you just have carte blanche to do it at your own speed?
No, it's always a time deadline. And even when it's not, it becomes one, you know, because times when I've worked on project where they say, you know, we have so much time, you can do whatever you want, take your time, you know, at some point that changes. And it's, I think deadlines, I've gotten to appreciate them in some senses, but there's definitely been some projects where they've created a lot of stress. But yeah, I would say 99% of the time there's a deadline. And yeah, when there's not, there becomes one at some point.
Yeah. So now on your FX project, AKA Jane Roe, I mean, that touches on the, let me read this. The chronicles the deathbed confession of Norma McCovey, impoverished pre-choice woman who was paid and recruited by the religious right to be the poster woman for the anti-abortion movement, working their way into her life to flip her and turn her into Jane Roe. I mean, that in itself is an extraordinary story. So how did you take that and create the score for such a powerful piece of and disturbing piece of history?
Yeah, I think that Nicholas Sweeney, the director, was very helpful in the sense that, you know, he kept insisting that we were telling the story of one woman as opposed to a generation of women or a history of a country. And so I became really grounded in just trying to tell her specific story. And the story was so interesting in terms of just the ups and downs of her life, in terms of the times when she was put in front of the national media versus the times where nobody wanted to talk to her. And the more I allowed myself to just focus on how she was feeling and trying to express those emotions, the easier the project became, as opposed to like trying to figure out how to musically capture the issues at large. And just the nature of the story, like the way that she was recruited by these people, almost it started to feel to me like some sort of spy thriller. Like she had all of these secrets that she wasn't telling. There was a lot of money being exchanged, and there were tactics being used of moving into office spaces next to hers. And it started to remind me kind of some older, you know, 1970s spy thriller books and movies. And so I found myself kind of trying to write for that genre almost at times in the film, which was really interesting to me and allowed me to kind of explore some sounds like the vibraphone and different instruments that I haven't gotten to use a lot in other projects.
I mean, it's not every day, I guess, that a project like that comes along. So it must be a really exciting process to be able to sort of investigate further into how that all works for you in a sort of musical capacity.
Yeah, every project's different in that regard. I think this one was especially interesting because there was so much secrecy around it. Like a big part of the film was this kind of breaking news, this deathbed confession. And so I signed a lot of paperwork. I wasn't allowed to talk about it. And so I was making all this music and working on this project and wasn't really able to express myself or discuss it with any of my friends or family. And I try to approach every project from the perspective of creating a unique musical language. And of course, it doesn't always happen. And there's a lot of crossover between the music. But I think at least if I kind of, from the beginning, try and give each film its own style, its own sound, then even if I don't end up in that place, I feel good about the process that I took to get there.
Do you think when people go, okay, yes, we would love Jackson Greenberg to do this, do you think they come to you because they know that you have a specific sound? Or why do you think people come to you specifically, apart from the fact you're super talented? That's saying.
I don't know. I mean, it's a good question. I'm not sure there's a specific sound that people are recognizing yet. I would say, like, when I have discussions with people that approach me and want to hire me, the biggest thing I hear is that I've been able to somehow make documentary films feel cinematic in a way that doesn't feel like it's pushing the audience to feel a certain thing. And I think that's been the biggest challenge for me in scoring documentaries is how can we make this feel special, important, make people feel sad or connected to the material, but not in a way that feels manipulative. And I think that's something that I've started to understand how to do. And I think that's why I've been able to get a lot of work in documentaries. But at the same time, I've been, you know, releasing music and I've gotten other jobs where people take my scores from a documentary and put it on to a dramatic film. So maybe that's a skill set that applies to both areas, but I think that's it for now, but who knows?
Well, okay. So you composed the original score for Emmy award-winning Cartel Land, the theme song for Explained on Netflix. You are one of six fellows of Sundance Institute. And I believe you went to the George Lucas Skywalker Ranch for that accolade. Is that right?
Yeah, every summer they invite six kind of young and upcoming composers up to study with like legends, film scoring. It's like Thomas Newman was there when I was there. And yeah, that experience was incredible.
Tell us, what was it like? What's the place? Is it huge? I mean, what's it like? Is it like being in a sort of Star Wars set?
No, I loaded up all my instruments into my car and I drove from LA up to San Francisco, like across the Bay Bridge and into Marin. And then I thought I was lost. And then all of a sudden I was like, this can't be it. And turned into this driveway. And yeah, there's kind of a nondiscreet security hut. I signed an NDA that I wouldn't really like tell people about the work that was going on there. I think they were finishing the sound mix for Rian Johnson's Star Wars. And then you're kind of just, it feels like a ranch. Like there's a little inn and there's cows and vineyards and hills and a lot of good hiking trails. And then kind of hidden in these like ranch style homes are these like IMAX mixing stages.
Was George Lucas in?
He wasn't there, but
oh, no.
We were allowed to see like the first floor of his house, which is kind of a museum of all old props and a library of old film books. And yeah, it's just the amount of talent that just gets to go there every day to work. It felt surreal in the sense that, you know, here are these people that are doing sound effects for Steven Spielberg movies and Star Wars movies. And yet, you know, they open their windows and they're looking out on this like really beautiful place every day. It definitely was inspiring in that sense of like, okay, well, hopefully we can get to a point where I'm able to work on these projects that I love in these beautiful environments. It was definitely a bit of paradise for those 2 weeks, for sure.
You know, it's interesting that you mentioned beautiful environments because I do think it makes all the difference in the world. You know, I happen to have a view of a lot of greenery. I live in a canyon. And every day when I wake up and I see that view, I feel very lucky because it puts my head into a certain sort of nature orientated mindset, right? And I think, you know, as you were just saying, when you have that beauty around you, it really helps you sort of feel creative. And even if you don't have it automatically around you, being able to go and find it. And I think living in LA, you know, we're both very fortunate to be able to find it quite easily, whether you go into the mountains or you go down to the beach. And I think what I also love about LA, coming from London, is that if you can ski in the morning and by the evening you can be on the beach.
Yeah.
It's sort of pretty amazing, right? And I think all of those elements with LA, within LA, sort of help you sort of to be creative. Because you come from Philadelphia, right?
Yeah, Philadelphia, we would go on camping trips and we would go skiing in the Poconos and it was great. But then I came to LA like almost 10 years ago and I remember going into Joshua Tree and going into Sequoia National Park and feeling like I was on a different planet. And there's no way for those things to not be inspiring. You know, you're kind of like, well, I thought we had beautiful nature on the East Coast, and we certainly do. But on the West Coast, it's just a different scale. It's much larger and vaster, and there's more space, and it's more unique looking. And yeah, so those two places in particular, Sequoia and Joshua Tree, have been really important to me. And
I can't wait to go to Joshua Tree. I have a big birthday later this year, and I think that's what I'm going to do.
That's a great idea.
But so, my podcast, as you know, is called For Love and Music. And I called it For Love and Music because those are the two reasons that I moved to LA. So I like to throw in a little bit of love, you know, during the podcast. Nothing too personal. But I like to sort of find out, do you have a love song that has really influenced you in your life, or a romantic song that sort of stands out, resonates with you?
Yeah, I think there's a lot. It's hard to choose. I mean, I think as growing up, you know, my main musical influences were probably Gustav Mahler and opera, in terms of like my grandfather, who lived in New York, was a huge opera fan. But then on the other side, my mom grew up in Detroit in Motown. So there was always Motown on in the house. And so I don't know, if I really think about my career, I think about, okay, well, I'm doing film scoring and writing kind of classical romantic pieces in that sense. And then I'm also kind of doing some pop production, like the Explain theme song, and working with other people. And so it's all that stuff that I was exposed to as a kid. But if I had to pick like specifically, I think Cigarettes and Coffee by Otis Redding is a big one for me. And then just really any adagio from Gustav Mahler's symphonies, like from the 9th or the 6th, like any one of his slow movements to me is incredibly romantic. And maybe the Otis Redding song is romantic in the sense that we all think about, in terms of evoking late nights and early mornings, like with a partner. But for me, the Mahler is romantic in the sense that it's able to kind of capture those things about life that are hard to talk about, whether it's, you know, birth or death or family or loss or love, in a way that's like makes you feel connected to the rest of the world, which is, I think, one of the main reasons that I'm in music in the first place, is kind of searching for that feeling of the things that are underneath the surface of life. And music, I think, is one of the ways that I've found to connect to those feelings.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying, which actually leads me to my next question. So has love ever helped you make an unexpected decision in your career?
Yeah, I mean...
Oh, there was a pause, so there's clearly a good answer coming.
I think it's helped me make a couple of unexpected decisions. I think one of them I'm thinking about is romantic, and one is a different kind of love. And the one that was romantic was that I was in a relationship with an actress who was working out of state for a while, and she was working in New Mexico, and there was working in these like beautiful environments. And so one of the ways that we ended up communicating was I would just kind of send her these little piano pieces that I was recording on my iPhone for her to kind of relax to in between her shoots and walk around in the desert and listen to. And I completely forgot about those pieces. And then I was going through my iPhone looking for something else and kind of rediscovered them. And I had such an emotional connection to those pieces because of the time in my life that they symbolized. And I kind of uncovered all of these other pieces that were similar in that sense of like, I had been on vacation and the house we were renting had a piano, and all of these things that I had recorded on my iPhone kind of came together to tell this story of my travels and my life and my romances in a way that made perfect sense to me. And the hope is that it tells a story to other people about their own lives. And so I gathered them into a collection, and it is now, you know, coming out on my own record label in a way that it's very rare that I write music that I've away from film that I feel confident to release. But I think because of the emotional connection that this has, I've decided to kind of put it out into the world.
Well, I love that you've clearly had such a big For Love and Music moment, and that you've also shared with us that we'll be able to, you know, actually hear some of the emotion through your music that you're releasing. So tell me about the label. Where do we hear this music? I'm all ears now. I'm going to be imagining loads of different things.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, all the pieces were recorded on my iPhone. And so I called the record Voice Notes because that's what it's called on the iPhone app. And it's over the course of 3 years. And I took the music, and with this wonderful friend and engineer, Chris Sorum, who does a lot of work for Rufus Wainwright and other musicians, we kind of were able to take the audio recordings of the iPhone, which are not super high fidelity, and kind of run them through some equipment to make them sound really interesting. And so, yeah, that record will be coming out at the end of June, kind of on Spotify, Apple Music. There'll be a limited edition vinyl pressing that will be available on my website, and yeah, all those good things. So I'm really excited to share that with the world. And there'll be a companion video piece that I'm actually working on now, which is 8mm videos from my dad's childhood. So it's kind of that cross pollination of, okay, like these pieces are from my iPhone about my life. And for some reason, I think because I'm a film composer, when I just randomly was listening to them as I was kind of, my dad was sending me this footage that he had found, it felt like it went together really well, both in practice and in the idea of how these things were recorded.
And tell me, what's your website so that we've got all the information to go and find all of this amazing stuff?
It's jacksongreenberg.com, and my email is on there. All the projects that I've worked on for film and TV on there, as well as my independent releases. And yeah, if anybody's interested, the vinyls are on there from that piece, and also from a piece I recorded with the Slovakian National Orchestra last year. And so there's a lot of good stuff on there, and it's easy to get in touch with me or my agent, and I'm always happy to interact with different people. So jacksongreenberg.com.
Excellent. Well, thank you for sharing that with us. And one last question. So where would you like to be in 5 years' time? Obviously out of forced isolation, but where would you like to be?
You know, I think when I moved to LA, I was really interested in working on giant movies and getting my name out there and having as many people as possible listen to my music. But I think now, with almost 10 years of experience, the things that I'm really interested in are working with other interesting, kind, smart people. So I think, you know, to be fully transparent, I would love to work on more film and TV outside of the documentary world. And I hope that in those pursuits and those endeavors, the type of directors and artists that I get to work with are as interesting and good humans as the ones I've already worked with. So
are there any directors out there who you would be like, I would absolutely love to work with him or her? I'm here.
Yeah, well, it's maybe a cheating answer, but a good friend of mine is a director named Nia DaCosta, who wrote and directed an amazing film called Little Woods. And her next film is the kind of remake / sequel to Candyman, which was written by Jordan Peele. And her and I have met actually at the Sundance Labs and have become really good friends. And we're not sure about the project, but would love to work on, we've been talking about some sort of intimate science fiction romance film. And that, I think, is exactly what I'm describing, is like being able to work with someone you have a relationship with that you there's trust and there's compassion, and they're also, you're pushing each other to do better work than you've ever done before. So that would be a dream of mine to work with her.
Well, I'm going to keep everything crossed that happens for you, and I'm sure that it will. So listen, thank you so much for being a truly fabulous guest. Do stay safe and healthy during these challenging times. And I wish you all the best for the future. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. It's been great talking to you.
Absolute pleasure. And to all the For Love and Music listeners out there, you'll be hearing from me again very soon. Thanks so much. Stay safe all. Bye.
Thank you for listening to For Love and Music with Tara Joseph. For more information, you can check out at For Love and Music Official on Instagram, at For Love and Music Official on Facebook, and also visit www.jamartistgroup.com/podcast.